From the Roots Up. CIUT 89.5 FM. Toronto.
There I am. I just heard my voice. Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Phil Taylor. We're going to be talking today to two very interesting individuals who are doing important work in the world. Alex Tirel of the Green Party of Quebec, and later in the show we will be talking to Peter McFarlane, author of Family Ties, and he's going to be talking about a new edition of a novel by Anne Charney called Dobrid. Very, very, very important book relevant to contemporary Ukraine. And that'll probably be about the half hour mark. But I think we are joined now by Alex Tirel. Are you there, Alex?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Alex, thanks very much. You've done exactly what I would hope that every Canadian would try to do in this new situation with a curious American president called Donald Trump, but also trade wars, and where Canada has to seriously look at its future. And one of the great economies of the world is China, and you have gone to China as a political leader, and it seems to me, we need to hear about these things. Why did you decide to go?
Well, I've been working on the issue of anti-Chinese racism for a certain amount of time. Like in Quebec at the Green Party, we've dealt with denouncing all kinds of different Islamophobia, systemic racism, attacks on religious freedom and people's right to wear religious symbols and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But that brought me to the issue of anti-Chinese racism, especially with this new foreign agents registry bill that was unanimously adopted in the House of Commons, mm-hmm. which essentially...
You said unanimously.
Yeah, unanimously.
Are we talking about that is a political tragedy.
Yeah.
Unanimous. Please go on. I'm sorry, but I just have to remark that it was unanimous.
But basically, this bill, which passed last year, made it a crime under the criminal code, punishable with up to life in prison, for people who are involved in Canadian politics and that are associated with somebody that's involved with a foreign government. So it's very poorly defined. The word associate is not very clear, and the penalty is very heavy. And so I had started on my podcast, The Eco Mindset, a little mini series about anti-Chinese racism. And I had interviewed Senator Wu, who's a very outspoken Canadian senator who had been denouncing this bill. Mm-hmm. And also talked with other people, including William Deer, who had written a book titled Being Chinese in Canada. And really gotten into some of the history about anti-Chinese racism in Canada, of course, with the head tax, in which in the late 1800s, the Canadian Railway was built essentially by Chinese migrant workers who came to Canada owing the government a head tax, so they were indebted once they arrived. And then also later on in the 20s, a law which completely banned any Chinese immigration, despite all of the work that they had done on the railway. So Canada has a long history with anti-Chinese racism. Stephen Harper even apologized for it in 2006 and paid some reparations for the head tax. So,
and of course, promised not to do it again until 2024, right?
Right, right. So now it's kind of like the modern Exclusion Act, which is making it very difficult for anybody of Chinese descent to be involved in Canadian politics. And of course, there's a huge number of Canadian citizens of Chinese descent. And this hysteria that we see in mainstream Canadian media and politics around Chinese interference in elections is not rooted in reality. And really, it's a tool to sort of keep Chinese Canadians out of the political process, which they have a right to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very preoccupying. And the other thing about this false narrative about Chinese interference in Canadian elections is that it can sort of prep the population for an eventual armed conflict with China.
Yes.
And of course, at the over the last few years, the Canadian government has actually sent warships and military aircraft to challenge the sovereignty of China by flying and sailing through the Strait of Taiwan.
Yes.
So these are very provocative actions that the Canadian government has taken. And I felt a responsibility to denounce these matters in a political context on my podcast and, you know, with my work at the Green Party of Quebec. And then earlier this spring, I was contacted by the Chinese embassy in Ottawa, and they said that they were organizing a tour for Canadian media and influencers to go and visit three cities in China.
Yeah, please come and have a look.
Exactly, exactly. And so I had wanted to go to China for a long time as a tourist, right? But this was a great opportunity because it allowed us to have access to the foreign ministry and to have meetings about the Canada-China relationship with the Chinese government, and also to see a lot of different, high-tech facilities that, that they're very proud to showcase.
Mm-hmm. It's this thing of, just to go back to one reference you made there, it really is an urgent matter because we're being driven along by the great power to the south, and here we are with Canadians actually very skeptical about, and always have been actually, about what Washington does. And they're giving Canada a hard time with tariffs and talk about taking over the country, and yet those warships went and did a favor, did their due diligence on behalf of Washington. By the way, and isn't it a case that Canada is one of the countries that has signed on and said, yes, we recognize Taiwan as part of China?
Exactly.
Almost madness that we're talking about.
Yeah, the official Canadian policy recognizes one China, yet Canada is sailing these warships down there challenging the sovereignty. And not just that, but they're doing it with CBC journalists on board, and then when the boats and the planes get intercepted, they act like, oh, look how aggressive China is, look how close they're getting to our boats.
They're flying over their own airspace.
Exactly.
How do they dare do that? Surely we'll get our Air Force together. But to go to China again, you have a green mandate. You're the leader of the Green Party of Quebec. One of the first questions I would have is, based on what's going on here, everybody is jettisoning. Every editorial department has decided we ought to no longer be so concerned about the carbon footprint and about the global warming. That all is being shunted aside here. What did you find in China?
Well, in China, there's a certain amount of progress that's been made on the environmental front, like the emissions per person are less than they are in Canada, and there's a lot of electric vehicles that have been deployed, there's a lot of public transit, and there's a lot of like really high-tech kind of stuff that's coming, like specifically small electric vehicles, like really small ones, affordable. They're also leaders in technologies like solar panels. So there's a lot of like high-tech development that's being done to address like the climate situation. But, you know, China's not perfect either, right? Like it is a society that, you know, consumes like a lot of throwaway plastic and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are industrializing, right? There is a lot of energy consumption and there is a certain amount of waste and everything like that, right? So, and car, from what I understand, car culture is expanding as well. And people even in big cities like Beijing, you know, do take cars to commute and stuff like that, right? It's not like an environmentalist utopia where everything is perfect, right? But at the same time, like,
well,
they have managed to make a lot of progress on air quality.
But it's also a public issue with them, is it not? I mean, actually, maybe I'm wrong, but I would like to know your impression. When I look at it, it seems to me that it's clearer in Canada. They've just, and certainly in the U.S., they've just basically decided to jettison the issue.
That's it. It's definitely more of a government priority over there than it is here.
It's all win the trade war is all what they're worried about.
Yeah, that's it. Both Canada and China have been attacked by Trump's trade war. And actually, while I was over there, the Chinese ambassador to Canada put out a statement saying that, you know, in light of the trade war, that Canada and China should strengthen their trade relationship, right? So the door is definitely open that way. And I find it unfortunate when Melanie Joly was foreign affairs minister, she was saying like, oh, look, Trump, we want to work with you. You know, we'll go, you know, toe-to-toe with you on China and everything. We'll get them together and stuff like, you know, I think it's counterproductive. Canada should have a good relationship with China. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more opportunity than there is downside. And at the moment, it's like the Canadian media is sort of almost portraying China as like a bit of like an enemy. Mm-hmm. When meanwhile, they're one of our biggest trading partners. And when you start portraying countries like that as the enemy, it's sort of like blocking them out. So it makes things like, research partnerships like much more difficult between universities and that kind of thing. And really, Canada cannot afford to pretend that China does not exist and look in the other direction. Like, China's leading on so many different fronts, and it's, you know, one of the biggest countries in the world with 1.4 billion people. We can't afford to ignore them. We need to work in partnership and, you know, see what can be done to strengthen the relationship.
Yeah. And, where did you, you were in Beijing, Shanghai, where did you visit?
Yeah, well, we started in Beijing. We had a visit to the foreign ministry in Beijing. It was kind of a really fast trip. It was only 24 hours in Beijing. Then we were off to Hangzhou, which is really like a high-tech kind of city that has put in place a lot of policies to attract tech startups. So we saw some different high-tech facilities over there and did a bit of tourism. And then after that, we went to Qingdao, which is a former German colony, and had a few stops on the tour over there. That was like the official part of the visit. So it was 6 days of organized tour. Mm-hmm. And then I extended my stay for another week after that. And then I was solo traveling at that point. So I did Shanghai, which is the world's third largest city with 25 million people.
Wow.
And I also went to a landscape called the Yellow Mountains, which is a really beautiful World Heritage Site with these huge granite mountains.
Mm-hmm. And what's your general impression? I mean, what stood out for you in that trip? And
what stood out for
were
me?
Were you intellectually prepared for what you saw? I mean, you know what? China's gone through a fantastic, at least, you know, reading about it, seeing the pictures, et cetera, from here, quite a transformation in really rapid period of time.
Yeah, that's it. Things appear to be moving fast, right? And for me, the most interesting part of the trip was the first day and the, you know, meetings in the capital about the Canada-China relationship, right? Like, as a political person, that's what was the most interesting to me. But, beyond that, looking at, for example, we went to a port in Qingdao, one of the biggest ports in the world, and there was about half of it that was, like, fully automated. So the containers were being removed from the ships, stacked, sorted, transported around the yard, and then loaded onto trucks like completely autonomously. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty interesting. And we were also on a bridge at one point, a 27-kilometer-long bridge, one of the longest bridges in the world that's in the same city. You know, they showcased a lot of different green technology, like they were hosting like world meetings about passive energy housing. So they're basically houses that are built in the way to consume the lowest amount of energy as possible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're really proud to showcase the different technologies like this and their commitment to them and the goals that they've set for the next decades and that sort of thing. So that was really interesting. I also got to ride on the fastest train in the world, the magnetic levitation train that they have between the Shanghai metro system and the airport. It's about a 30-kilometer stretch, and we were going at 300 kilometers an hour on there. And I hear the top speed of that train is like 450 kilometers an hour.
450?
So, yeah.
Boy, so that you was think it might levitate at 450?
Well, it does levitate, eh? Like
yeah, it is levitation. Could you describe, what's that feel like? It's not your ordinary train ride, I guess. You've been on trains all over. What's it like?
Yeah, it's quite different. Well, when they turn it on, like it kind of starts floating over the track, and then they go forward. You know, compared to, let's say, a train that's on rails, like the ride is quite different. You know, I would say that the rail system is a little bit smoother, right, because you have, like, metal-on-metal contact, whereas the magnetic levitation, you do bounce around, like, a little bit. Mm-hmm. And since you're going 300 kilometers an hour, like, the turns have, like, an embankment to them.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's it. So it is fast, but you do feel the speed, kind of. And at one point, like, we were going 300 kilometers an hour, and there was another train coming in the other direction, also at 300 kilometers an hour, and, like, the... You know, the impact of the wind there was, like, quite significant. startled me a bit there.
Let's go by in an eye blink.
Yeah, yeah, it was really fast. And, you know, there's some more projects like that are in the works, like, for the next few years. But for the moment, like, this is the fastest commercial train that's in service and accessible to the public anywhere in the world that reaches that kind of speed. And, like, beyond the magnetic levitation train, it's also that they've got high-speed trains, you know, that roll at about 200 to 250 kilometers an hour deployed, like, really all over the country and for really affordable rates as well. And when you go to the stations, there are these, you know, high-tech, nice, clean, big stations and everything. And the whole experience is very comfortable, right? Mm. So that's something that they're definitely ahead of Canada on that. I mean, already is Chinese migrant labor that built the Canadian railway system. Canada's still got a lot to learn from China in terms of railways because, you know, they're much more developed than, like, Via Rail, for example, which doesn't even have its own dedicated set of tracks and is not that fast and is, like, very expensive and not used by that many people. Over there, it's the complete opposite for that. So that's definitely something that we could improve on. Like, the city of Shanghai has a subway system with 18 different subway lines.
And 18?
Yeah, 18. And some of these stations have 20 exits.
Have what?
Yeah, they have 20 exits in one station. You know, there'll be, like, three lines. I mean, mm-hmm. There's one station I'm thinking of here downtown. Like, there's, like, three different subway lines that go there. There's shopping malls attached to the underground and everything, and there's 20 different exits, and, like, you're walking through the station, and, like, exits 1 to 4, like, this way, and, like, everything is pretty well signed, and English is, like, the second language, so a lot of the signs have, like, the English underneath, but it was definitely difficult to navigate at times because things like the application, like WeChat, that, you know, you use to pay for basically everything, and to use it to get taxis and to pay for your subway ticket and stuff like that, it often reverts back to Chinese, you know? So, like, the translation is kind of difficult. So I was taking screenshots of that and having them translated on Google Translate and going back and forth and stuff. So there was a bit of a language barrier at times, especially going out to the Yellow Mountains. Actually, what was kind of funny about that was that I was there on what they call Golden Week, which is kind of like spring break. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many Chinese people have, like, that week off. And so the tourist sites are completely flooded with, like, locals, right, or at least people from within China that are there. So I went up to this mountain, and it was sold out for the day. It was completely packed. And, like, it felt like being in Montreal subway system, like, walk at rush hour, just walking around to the top of the mountain. But basically, like, there was almost no, like, white people or foreigners there. And five different times during the day, people asked me to take, like, selfies with them, like, because of that. So
I saw one of those guys.
That, you know? Yeah.
Here's a picture of me with a Canadian. Look at this.
Yeah, exactly. So
look at his shirt.
I mean, it's kind of like a novelty, you know, but it's nice to get to a welcome like that, right, rather than, like, the opposite, you know, which would be like, oh, you don't belong here and stuff. Very friendly that way, you know.
We're speaking Alex Tirrell, leader of the Green Party of Quebec, and thank goodness he went to China. Alex, we have a political problem, don't we? Why can't we... We have a parliament that will vote unanimously on issues to do with China. I remember the Uyghur vote. Unanimous. None of the people who voted have ever been to China, as far as I know, certainly didn't do any investigating. Shouldn't we have parliamentary committees would accept invitations and go look around the way other countries do?
Well, yeah, that's it. Like with the Uyghur issue, the issue came up in the meetings, right? And they said people should go and look. The region is open to tourism, and they say that this Uyghur genocide narrative is Western propaganda that's unsubstantiated. That apparently, if you go there, you'll see mosques operating openly. The population is growing. And that's what they say. The whole thing is propaganda. So
yeah, it's growing faster than the rest of the population.
Yeah, that's it. So there's definitely questions asked about that, and especially that genocide has been condemned, like, by the Canadian Parliament, when they haven't condemned the genocide in Gaza, right?
Yeah.
And in Gaza, you see the bombs falling on people's houses, on schools. They're wiping out entire neighborhoods, ethnic cleansing, like
hospitals, mosques. Yes,
exactly. Many attacks on hospitals and, you know, and on children and everything. And despite that, Canada won't condemn that genocide, but they'll very quickly condemn this sort of obscure and, like, you know, not well substantiated.
But also was not a slightest iota of research. Nobody, you know, you would think there would be a parliamentary committee struck of all and then say, let's go look around. And by the way, they're perfectly... It would be within their rights to say, well, we didn't see this, we did, but at least some effort to document instead of just regurgitating something they got from Washington.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Canadian attitudes towards China are really warped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I start telling some people that I'm going there, people, oh, be careful, they're going to detain you and stuff like this. First of all, I'm invited by the Chinese government on a sponsored trip. I don't think that's the case. But also, like, a lot of that stuff is completely out of touch with reality. Like, the Canadian government has on its website, like, a travel advisory that, like, business people could be, like, arbitrarily detained and stuff like that. Like, it's not the case, you know? Like, when you look at who has that happened to, you know? Like, they don't have, like, a whole bunch of examples. Like, they always come back, like, to the Michaels, right?
Which turned out to be a very bizarre story, where one Michael's not very fond of the other Michael.
No, that's it. And one of them sued the Canadian government, saying that they were spying and that they need to be compensated for it. So, I mean, it's like that whole thing. Like, we're presented like as if those people are completely innocent and stuff like that. Well, you know, it's a little bit more complicated than that. So, like, this idea about people being, like, arbitrarily detained for no reason, like, in my view, is not substantiated. And so the Canadian government is actively playing into, like, making people afraid of China, right? And it's the same thing with that.
And threatening to China.
Interference.
Yeah.
Exactly, and threatening and
now
preparing
Alex,
us for a conflict.
In the, I think it's very important to ask you and to get, and I wish everybody would address this question. Here, China is a major economy, and they believe in, and they say it out loud, in a win-win relationship with anybody who wants to do business. Now, we put a 100% tariff on electric vehicles, and we're very unhappy that Trump put a 35% on us. Why can't we ask China to build some vehicles here? We let the Japanese companies build vehicles here. The Americans get to build vehicles here. Isn't it realistic, or objectively speaking, that to try to acquire electric vehicles, say, as the way Norway, and Norway apparently is buying Chinese electrical vehicles, the numbers grow each year.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's not just the tariffs on the electric vehicles, but also the solar panels as well, right? So mm-hmm. Canada is willing to slow down the energy transition for political reasons, right, mm-hmm. of not wanting to deal with China and following the U.S. Lead on that. So I think that's really unfortunate. And it also, like right now, at least in Quebec, you can't buy a small electric vehicle, right? They're only like big sedans and SUVs. Like, they canceled every small electric vehicle model that there was on the market at one point or another. So, but China, they have like really small ones, right? Mm-hmm. That don't have the same environmental impact. The batteries are not as heavy. There's not as many resources that go into them. So we should have something like that over here. And there should definitely be some sort of a partnership.
Yeah, those things are like $5,000, right?
Well, for the $5,000 is probably a pretty small one there, but for $20,000 you can get actually a fairly big one, you know. So I'm not an expert about all the different models.
By the way, did you drive any of those? Have you tried them?
I didn't get to drive them. I got to sit in them, but I didn't get to drive them.
What's your impression of them?
It looks really high tech and really well laid out, and a lot of like futuristic features and everything. At one point, like, I got into a semi truck, and it had both a gasoline and electric engine, and they said that it could do 600 kilometers on the electric, with towing a trailer, which is, you know, we don't have anything like that here, right? And you know, I don't know how well it'll hold up to its advertised standards, but if it does, like, that's a huge advancement. And to be able to have both the gasoline and the electric, like, can really make it so you can extend the range. Like, if you've got an 800-kilometer trip and you do the first 600 on electric and the last two on gas, I mean, that's a huge step forward, right?
Yeah.
And the battery technology there also appears to be, like, quite a bit more advanced than what we have in North America.
They're reducing the size, right?
Yeah, that's it. The size, the cost, the efficiency is going up. So they're leading on that front as well, you know. And a lot of people from the environmental movement have been saying, like, for decades, you know, like, invest in developing batteries and that kind of thing. But the North American side didn't really do it. Like, they, you know, moved away from electric vehicles, like, in the 90s and went more for gas and SUVs and this kind of thing. So, I mean, this is, like, the result of that. But the situation today is that their technology is far more advanced, and we can try and block it out all we want, but we're missing out on a lot of things.
Well, thank heavens you went there, Alex Tyrrell, to the Green Party. I really hope that you campaign on this. I think the Canadians are really ready to listen to this discussion about electric vehicles, particularly in the face of Donald Trump. Alex, thank you very, very much. We look forward to talking to you more, because you've had quite a trip. There's a lot more to be talked about. So,
yeah, definitely. I could go on for hours. But thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we'll do it. Thanks, Alex. Okay, bye-bye.